Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am back from Las Vegas. I have my microphone. Harrison, did you know it's really hard to record podcasts if you don't have a microphone?
Oh, is that the excuse you're going with for not recording podcasts this time? Okay, yeah, Anthony, it was your microphone that there was just, yeah, there was.
In fairness, the one time I tried to record, or I did record a podcast, I tried on other occasions, and it just never quite sounded right because we had the AC blasting because we were in Las Vegas in the middle of the summer. But the one time I did record a podcast with Jeff, my tone was like a whisper, and you could hear Jeff like just picture perfect. Or
honestly, it was the best podcast that you've ever recorded without me or Pete in Locked On Lakers history. It was just like, it was great because I would just like all the times when normally you're just like incessant trolling of Lakers and or Kobe fans. Mm-hmm. Like whenever that would normally be in there, it was just like kind of silence. Like you could hear like a little murmuring in the background. And then all of a sudden Jeff would come in with like logical points. And so it was like, it was a really fun listen for me. I honestly think that maybe you should set up like a Patreon where that's like, that's a perk.
That's
you
an option. Get
the Locked On Lakers podcast, but with no Anthony voice. Or yeah. Just like the parents from the Peanuts dubbed over you. So it's just like wah, 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 wah every time you talk.
I'll look into it. I watch the Patreon blows up now.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You're going to be rich.
I'm going to be Luol Deng. I'm going to be paid really, really well to not do anything.
Well, no, yeah, that's almost the most fun part to me is you still have to do every single part of your job, just no one will ever hear it.
Today on the podcast, and by the way, that's Harrison, so you guys know that Harrison is on the podcast for today. Today we are recording a random Saturday morning / afternoon show that's going to go up as soon as we're done recording because of last week's schedule. We'll see about a show tomorrow. And then Sunday, I'll get back to mailbag Mondays. So if you have questions, send those in via 5-star iTunes reviews, and I'll get to those. You guys know where to find the show. iTunes, Megaphone / Panoply. iTunes. Wow. I might have to delete that part. But you guys know where to find the show. Find me, find Harrison, all that good stuff. Today on the show, we're going to talk about the Lakers center situation, which is JaVale McGee starting, Ivica Zubats as the primary backup, and Mo Wagner. is that a championship caliber starting rotation for you at the five?
I mean, the short answer is no, and then the longer answer is I don't really even think that the Lakers think that that's a starting caliber championship center rotation. You know what I mean? Like, I think obviously they have to know that they have holes there that they're going to have to fill. But I think for this summer, you know, maybe it was the best they could do. Like, we don't know. Like, it sounds like Brooke Lopez was not going to be coming back. And so I think with him off the market, I think it is fair to question, without committing long-term money, is there, like, really a better option they could have gotten? Obviously, this isn't ideal. I'm not saying, like, oh, well, they did the best they could, and so they'll be fine. Like, I don't think they're going to be fine. But I also don't know that there was a possibility of them being fine, at least at the center spot in free agency. And so they may have just kind of accepted the, like, taken that loss and then tried to move on to filling other holes on the roster. Although I guess like you can debate the wisdom of the other signings that they've made.
I mean, I don't think there is a debate anymore, right? Like Lance Stephenson is just a bad signing. There is no point to be made about Lance Stephenson. And like this idea that
other than that, he's a 1 year.
This idea that, because I keep on getting this in my mentions, like, if Lance Stephenson gets you LeBron James, like, are you effing kidding me?
Okay, that's a straw man. Lance Stephenson did not get you LeBron James. LeBron James probably said, I do not doubt the reporting that LeBron James signed off on Lance Stephenson and was like, this is a guy I would like to play with. But realistically, LeBron probably gave them a bunch of names, the guys that he was fine playing with. And Lance Stephenson was the one that they could go get. And
could you imagine that conversation? Like, do you think LeBron thought they were kidding and then signed off on the joke? Like, oh, good one, guys.
I don't know. See, I don't know that it worked. Like, I don't have any inside info on that. But I would imagine this was a discussion. It wasn't like the Lakers called him up and are calling him about each one of these signings. I would imagine that they kind of talked with him in generalities about probably a list of guys that they thought they could potentially get. Like, that goes far beyond the guys that they actually got, you know, just so that they would have options and they would get to kind of get his thoughts on a couple options.
I actually want to talk about the potential conversation that they had, or the conversation that they reportedly had, that Magic and LeBron reportedly had at 9 p.m. Pacific time on July 1st, or I guess it would have been still July 30, whatever it is. But apparently they talked a lot about, you know, LeBron's career. Magic said he went over tape and all these things, and they had a productive conversation about that. And that leads me to believe something that gives me a little more confidence in this center rotation. Let me take a quick second here. When we come back, I'll entertain you guys with one of these theories that you guys seem to love. So, Magic goes to LeBron James' house an hour early, by the way. And I'm pissed that we never did like the as at Silver Screen and Roll. I'm annoyed that we never did the Magic Johnson standing out there with a boombox Photoshop for an hour.
Anthony, the 7-year-old that we hire to do graphic images can only do graphic images. We hire to do graphics. He's only capable of taking care of so many of those memes in one day. And, you know, he can't take all, like, he's not a suggestion box just for you of like jokes that you think of in your head. You have Photoshop. You could have taken care of that yourself.
Fair, I guess. But Magic says he went over tape and he studied LeBron's game, and they had a discussion on where they think that his game might be going. And that's, you know, some of the reporting about LeBron wants to move off of the ball. Does that make sense for him? Like, those kinds of things strike me as interesting in conjunction with this potential conversation or this reported conversation. And what I'm getting at here is, let's say, now again, you and I are both dubious as to whether or not LeBron will actually play the five, right? But let's say Magic goes to LeBron and says, look, what if we make you like the opposite of Draymond Green, where Draymond's impact is all on is mostly on defense. He's an animal on defense that allows the Warriors to do all kinds of things. What if we make you that, but on offense, where you are just a dynamo on offense, and we just surround you with as many of the best perimeter defenders that we can, and we basically reverse what the Warriors are trying to do, right? And if that's the case, and again, I wouldn't bet on it because LeBron has been reluctant to play the four, let alone the five. And Alex Regla in Silver Screen Slack said that LeBron has only played 1% of his minutes across his entire career at the five. But let's say they have that conversation, and the thing that comes out of it is, we could really use you playing the five for stretches of this season. We'll make it as easy as possible on you, and that means we don't need necessarily to go out and really stretch ourselves to sign a five, whereas what we'll really focus on are as many wing defenders and versatile wing defenders as we can get to make your life as easy as possible in that position.
So I think that is, you know, it's possible that was the plan they went to LeBron with. But at the same time, no matter how many versatile wing defenders they sign, the guys that they have signed are not going to be guarding centers. And, mm-hmm. you know, maybe they say, OK, well, Kuzma is going to guard the center on defense, and you can kind of play, both of you can kind of play four pluses, basically, where mm-hmm. like he'll be the one spacing the floor and you can be the one in the post, but he'll guard the centers and you can guard the four at times, or something like Kuzma or another player, just as right. an example. Mm-hmm. But I think even if you dust off like Luol Deng, as kind of stout as he was defensively at the four, I'm not really sure that is going to carry over against centers. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, there aren't a lot of centers anymore that are going to back you down. The bigger thing is rim protection.
Yeah.
And I, like from a rim protection perspective. And you know, maybe LeBron is willing to commit to, you know, shuffling out there against guards or dropping back on the pick and roll and trying to, like, keep them from getting to the basket, or he's willing to make weak side rotations. But we just haven't seen a whole lot of that in the regular season over the last couple of years. So I'm not really 100% convinced that LeBron, that that's what he signed up for, was to do more work on defense after kind of taking that. I mean, I guess. So this is something that I've been thinking about as far as signing all the playmakers is, was their goal ultimately, and this is something like they couldn't say because they don't want to like kind of admit that LeBron didn't try on defense last year. That would be kind of rude to their new free agent signing. But was part of their goal in signing more playmakers?
That'd be a great trying pitch.
Rob Pelinka just comes out in his intro presser and he's like, well, as you all know, I'm a storyteller. And a story that I do not want to bring up is how LeBron did not try on defense last year. Oh, no, I brought it up. But
Bill Orem? Rob, we're a little, you know, fans are a little concerned that that LeBron hasn't been playing defense for the last like 6 years of his career in the regular season. You know, Bill, that's a great question.
That's a great point, Bill. But no, I think maybe by getting all of those playmakers, the Lakers are trying to make the load easier on LeBron offensively so that he can put himself, like, put a little bit more effort on the defensive side. Mm-hmm. Because the reason he didn't try on defense at all last year, outside of, like, you know, sporadic pieces here and there before the playoffs, was that he had to do everything on offense for that team just to survive.
And he's not even unique in that kind of role, right? Like, James Harden gets crapped on for his defense all the time.
James Harden has tried a little harder over the last couple
years. But, like, Harden is never going to try as hard defensively as, like, Andre Roberson, because Harden is expected to do more on offense than Roberson is, right?
And yeah, exactly. So, like, maybe by signing, you know, they already have Lonzo in play. They have Kuz who can go get his own shot. Like, Josh Hart can do some secondary playmaking now. I talked to him a little bit about his fit with LeBron, and that was something that he mentioned, and that as well as like spacing the floor with shooting. And then you have the new guys. You brought in Rondo. Even Lance Stephenson, like, he's going to go out there and, like, the Lance is going to dance thing is a thing for a reason, because he goes out there and sometimes he just dribbles kind of in place. It's like that famous vine of just that guy dribbling between his legs like a thousand times.
Yeah.
Yeah, and not really getting anywhere. Lance will do that occasionally, but he can also go get a shot, which – even if it's not a good shot, that's a possession where LeBron didn't have to go create the shot and is then, you know, given a little bit more energy to go do something on defense. And maybe he'll consider, as long as he's not getting posted, like, against teams that don't have, I guess I can't even say DeMarcus Cousins now because he's probably not even going to play till midseason. But against teams that don't have a post-up big man, you know, maybe he can save more energy there defensively than he was able to, even when he was playing the three, even while theoretically, like, that would be a less taxing defensive position. But now it might be more, because you're having to switch so much, you're having to run around the perimeter. Whereas if he's guarding a five, it might just be a guy that's just kind of spacing the floor. Yeah. And so he may get to rest some anyway. That may be the less taxing defensive assignment.
And you know, really quickly, I want to make this point, then we're going to take a quick second and we'll come back and do 50 Shades of Shade with Julius Randle. But we saw what happened when the Lakers basically punted perimeter defense and hoped that Roy Hibbert made up for that, right, with rim protection. And maybe they're doing the inverse here, right, the opposite, where they're saying, we're just going to put as many animals on the perimeter, as many just insane people on the perimeter to switch and not allow penetration either via the pass or via dribbling dribble attacks, and maybe we allow LeBron. Yes, he'll have to do some rim protection, and I don't think he's really going to do that all that much. But if we allow fewer players to get to the rim, period, that becomes less of an issue.
And I do want to say, Matt Moore earlier last year had I believe it was Matt Moore wrote the article. It was kind of like breaking down the nuances of LeBron's defensive struggles, because, you know, everybody was kind of like, they would look at the you know, the videos of him not really trying, and they would look at the defensive metrics that said the Cavs were worse with him on the floor defensively. But the nuance to that is that LeBron still has like kind of a negative gravity on defense, where players are not really going at him. Guys are not going to isolate against LeBron James. Like, you may think that he's not going to try on defense, but you're not going to try and embarrass him, because then that's when he's going to start trying and he's going to lock you up. And so I think maybe there's something to that, that they think, you know, there's a possibility that if they did run out LeBron out there at center, that does kind of neuter a team's pick and roll attack to some degree, because guards are not going to want to get a switch onto LeBron James.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no. That's not a thing that they're going to go hunt down.
Right.
So they're going to try and do it to Kuz, or they're going to try and do it to someone else. And then that leaves LeBron free to make those weak side rotations that we were talking about. And so, you know, maybe there is some logic to this. I don't know. I feel like we're stretching ourselves a little bit to find it, but if it works out, like, I'd say there's a better than not chance that this doesn't work out that way.
Yeah.
And that this was all just kind of like us playing devil's advocate to some degree.
Yeah, trying to get ourselves to buy into it, really.
Yeah, but there is a chance that it works out. I'm not going to say that it's impossible that that strategy could work. I don't think it's the most likely outcome, but I think that strategy could work.
Yep. All right, we're going to take a quick second, and when we come back, we're going to talk about somebody who could have played the five in the small ball kind of situation and done some of the things that we're hoping maybe LeBron buys into in Julius Randle. And he had some interesting things to say about his time in L.A. He had this was pretty fantastic. I hope Harrison has it in front of him already. We're going to take a quick second. And come back and play a lot of people's favorite game, 50 Shades of Shade. All right, give us that quote.
Well, should we explain this game to thousands of new listeners you've acquired since I left the show?
Yeah. So first off, thanks for listening to a vastly better show.
That's the man who begged me to record on a Saturday morning when I otherwise would have had the morning off.
Well, I mean, fair. But the way this game is going to work, this came out. What was this like? This was just like a mass exodus. Like the 1 year players who left the Lakers would drop occasional shade or
well, it was the guys former who left, head coach, the guys who stayed about the former head coach.
Oh yeah. There you go.
Yeah. It was always like, it was these like kind of under the, it was right when Luke came in and like Nick Young started dropping some, George Clarkson was dropping them. I think even Nance had one, if I remember correctly. And like, if you pissed off Larry Nance, like, I feel like that's probably hard to do as a coach. I feel like Larry Nance is very much a guy, but like they just tell him to do something and he just goes and does it.
Unless you ask him for an autograph. And you're like a six-year-old kid.
Did that happen?
Yeah, it was on video and everything.
Oh, yeah, but to be honest,
I know. Yeah. We don't need to relitigate that.
Right. Anyway, so this game was a way of us, from a scale of 1 to 50, determining how much shade was thrown at a originally, it was Byron Scott. Ooh. And now it's I'm not a host on the podcast anymore, so I can say it.
All right, and anybody listening right now, listeners, I'm going to put up a poll. Should Harrison be fined for that?
No, you already said that this game was over in DMs, so like don't start that with me. Anyway, so it was a scale of 1 to 50 of how much shade was thrown. And so we're going to go ahead and read this quote from Julius Randle. Mm-hmm. He was asked during his introductory press conference with the Pelicans about, you know, basically what he thought about Darren Erman's defensive system and like kind of what he brought to the table with the Pelicans. He's the associate head coach of the Pelicans, like kind of their defensive coordinator. Mm-hmm. And so this is what he had to say. This year, I really started to take a pride in – oh, wait, nope, that's the wrong quote. That's a quote from further below. Okay, this is the first time in my 4 years of NBA experience I think I've done an individual defensive skills workout, did defensive drills. So for me, that says it all about how serious he is about that end, and I'm excited about that. I love that challenge.
I mean, I'm giving it a 50.
Okay, so So that's one way to take it. And then also backing that up, that it was shade, was that Dell Demps was laughing as Randle answered this question. Randle got about halfway through and Dell Demps started laughing. And so, you know, to me, that maybe that signifies it's shade. I got some pushback on that on Twitter. People were saying, oh, no, it's not shade. Randle was just – maybe he never did do individual defensive drills. And I alluded to this when I wrote about it. Maybe the Lakers only worked on defense in groups. And so maybe this was totally innocuous. I think that is totally – you could bury your head in the sand, and that is totally possible. Sure. that is what this meant. But Randle is smart enough to know how this was going to come off. And Dell Demps is smart enough to know that if he saw it was going to come off like this, that he would have said – and I think that that's really a credit to, you know, Darren Erman's defensive stuff, like more so than – you know what, and like reminded Randall, like, hey, like, make it clear that this is not a shot, like,
yeah, Randall, the laughter.
Randall to some degree deserves to be, it has a, totally has a right to be, yeah, pissed off at the Lakers and the way that things handle. I don't think that this is the way to handle it. I don't think that this is going to be a battle that you're going to win in public, especially when you have quotes like the one that I was about to read earlier floating around from, this is from last year, where he talks about defense to Kevin Ding of Lakers.com. And he said, this year I really started to take a pride in my team playing well defensively. And then individually, keyword, taking a challenge on being able to stop guys or get big stops down the stretch. I really have taken pride in that. I hate for teams to score or for somebody to score on me. And so, I mean, maybe he never worked on individual defensive drills during that, but like, that's very much a semantics argument that we could play. Mm-hmm. But to me, it seemed very much like shade. Yeah. And I guess on some level, it's kind of a Rorschach test for how much you really like Randall, or how much you want to believe that he could have done something like this. But, you know, the Lakers were a better defensive team than the Pelicans last year. And it's just like, I don't know, there's all kinds of reasons why you could pretty easily see this as shade. And so for me, in deference to the reasons why maybe it couldn't be, I'm going to say it's a 40, but I also understand why you would go with 50.
I think it all comes back to the way he left and the way he was treated while he was a Laker. Yeah. You know, he has every right, in my opinion, to be frustrated, right?
Like, but this is not the argument to make, right? I mean, the Lakers.
Well, no, I mean, statistically, that obviously not.
Don't play defense is, yeah, like so outdated, right, that
no,
he should have just said we've never done an offensive drill.
I think it's
like,
I think
that I would have bought that.
I think
after watching last year,
that's funny. This is the first time I've shot a three in practice.
I buy it. I totally buy it.
Yeah,
I've seen him shoot threes in practice, so that's a lie. But
yeah, but I don't know. I'm not going to hold it against him the way he chooses to go at the Lakers here. I think they did him dirty. Like,
but at the same time, like, this is not the point to make. This is not – like, right now you have some of the fans left on your side because of how they treated you.
Who cares about Laker fans? Like, Laker fans – like, there are Laker fans out there painting over murals.
Who cares about Laker fans, says the man whose finances are tied directly to Lakers fans.
No, like, honestly –
oh, no, I'm sorry, guys, that Anthony has started going so against you since I left. I tried to be your –
if I'm Julius Randle, right? Like, if I'm Julius Randle, why would I care what Laker fans have to say? Like, why would I care?
I guess, but then in that case, like, what's the point of doing this? You know, when it's so easily empirically debunked.
Well, under his first,
I mean, I guess sometimes
under his first couple of years, like, it wouldn't shock me if like a Byron Scott coach Lakers team didn't work hard enough defensively. They were terrible.
Yeah.
Right. And so like the Luke Walton thing, like they did obviously improve defensively and as a team, and even that quote that you gave, like I took that more as like individually out there on the court, I don't want somebody to score on him. Not necessarily that he was doing individual workout.
No. Yeah. But I mean like to say that the implication of that is that we didn't really focus on defense.
Yeah.
It's not that I never did. Never did individual defense.
Yeah, that's like, obviously untrue. But like, yeah. I don't think truth matters here. I think he's legitimately hurt, man. Like,
that would be totally fair for him to be. I just don't think that this is the way to go about dealing with that. I just think it's a bad look for him.
Who do you think looks worse, him saying this or the Lakers for just kind of not valuing him?
I don't really fault the Lakers. I don't think that the Lakers didn't value him. I think that the Lakers didn't value him more than the chance to pursue superstars this summer and next summer, which
I think
is a totally
different position. Do you think they valued him enough?
I mean, they signed LeBron. Like, I think they did. Like, I think they valued him enough. Like, if Randall wouldn't agree to a 1-year deal, I don't think that they were going to be willing to jeopardize cap space to
give
him.
But he essentially did. Like, a 1-year, like, if they offered him a team option or a player option, a 1-1, the way that he got there in New Orleans, and that gets it done, like, just get that done because he's going to opt out anyway.
I don't think that is necessarily true. Number one, he could get hurt and opt in, and then you have that hanging over your heads. And I also think for players, you only ever really see guys take less to leave. You almost never see them take significantly less than what they consider they're worth to stay. And what Randall took from the Pelicans was significantly less than what he would be worth in a market where teams had cap space. And so I think for him, it's almost like a safe face. You don't want to let – like, I think for players, it's a pride thing. Like, I showed you what I can do, and you still don't believe in me. I'll go take less from them just as an F you to you and show you what I can do.
Right, like, but I don't think he feels that. I don't think he feels that way. If he felt valued over the extent of his career with the Lakers, like think about.
Maybe, but I think the
think about what he went through. Like first off, he breaks his leg, loses his rookie year. Right, so there's nothing that could have been done about that. But then the next year that he plays in it with this Kobe farewell tour that had. Obviously, maybe it had a positive impact, and LeBron signed with the Lakers in some way because of it. But I happen to think that to that team specifically, that had a vastly negative impact on what that team was hoping to do. And then after that, you come back and all right, you change, you know, new coach. We're gonna get after it this year, and you know, you show some stuff, and now your starting spot is gone. And like. And then there was the weird timing of Julius Randle isn't starting, and if he only starts a certain number of games, the qualifying offer that would have to be given to him would be lower. And then once that was made public and people started wondering, like, wait, is that actually how they're doing business? Then he started starting because the optics of because the optics didn't look very good. And finally, he hits free agency and their focus. And I think also some of this has to do with Aaron Mintz. And Aaron Mintz, I think, had some kind of gripe with Pelinka based on some of the stuff that you've seen out there.
I also think that, you know, you can say all of that. Like, all that's fair. The Lakers did not show with their actions that they valued him. But I think the biggest action is, what type of check are you offering me? And even all that stuff aside, if the Lakers would have offered him what he felt was his market value, he's not taking less to go to the Pelicans. And so I think on some level, it was like, it didn't matter, even if they were like, okay, well, we'll give you $20 million over 2 years. Like, I don't think he's staying with the team that has already treated him like that for less than what he considers his full value. I think that, like,
but I think it's also possible he considered his market value higher for the Lakers, given how they treated him. Like, you guys are going to have to give me a little bit of a bump to stay here because of the way this has gone down to this point.
I think in some way we're getting at the same point. But for the Lakers, like, he – exactly. For that reason, he was not going to take – less from the Lakers. It's also just a pride thing. It's like, you've had me in your building and you don't value me, so I'm going to go to this place that is willing to give me that extra security year, but is also willing to let me opt out and get my full value. These guys are respecting me more. And so I think that, like, that's kind of it. I also don't think that the Lakers are wrong to do that. I think that from an objective perspective, they signed LeBron this summer. They kept cap space free to sign the superstar next summer. And nobody's going to be crying about Julius Randle if they sign Kevin Durant or Klay Thompson or whoever else is out there next summer, or Kawhi or whoever else is out there next summer.
I might still be crying about Julius.
I mean, yeah, but you're still crying about D'Lo. And, like, that was almost proven. Like, unless he breaks out this year, like, the Nets aren't even offering him an extension right now.
Well, I don't know if I would read between the lines there, but... The Nets, for the same reasons you're talking about, might be doing the same thing to D'Angelo Russell that the Lakers did to Julius Randle, right? Like, they're
it's possible. They're but very, the Nets have less. The Nets have less motivation to keep cap space clean. I'll just say that. Like,
I don't know that. Like, I've heard a ton of stuff about Kyrie being interested in Brooklyn.
Yeah, but that's from stuff. Like Cavs bloggers who think that Kyrie's a relentless contrarian, and, you know, like, maybe, but, well, I don't know.
They would think that because he's a relentless contrarian.
That's true. And, like, you know, I'm not saying that I couldn't see Kyrie sitting up there talking about Brooklyn as to steal a line from Ryan Morton about how, like, don't fall in and be a sheeple. Like, Brooklyn is the real team of New York.
Yeah.
Third eye. And, you know, I could see him up there doing that. But I also think there are probably more likely destinations for any superstar than Brooklyn.
Maybe.
Although Kenny Atkinson, like, I don't know, if they let him loose in the recruiting room, like, if he came in and he was recruiting me for even a job outside of journalism, I would probably go for that guy. Like, he is...
work at Staples.
Yeah, no, if Kenny Atkinson was a general manager at a Staples and he came in and, like, he was like, I'll pay you, you know, it's going to be a little less, but we're going to build an awesome team here. And, like, I almost might fall for it. Like, Kenny Atkinson is a very inspiring person.
Yep. All right, we're going to end it here on praise of Kenny Atkinson. And as usual, it was nice to bring you back on just so you can be wrong about the front office and about Julius Randle. It's
nice to occasionally get to come back and be a check on your rampant contrarian exceptionalism.
You know, actually, Locked On Lakers is the... No, I was going to try to do some kind of Kyrie joke, but I didn't want to besmirch anybody else.
Yeah, that's fair. I think I know what you're going for.
Let's end it here. I'm going to edit this really quickly and put this together and put this out there for you guys, seeing as last week was kind of a disaster. But enjoy the rest of your day. Harrison, thanks for hopping on, and I'll just keep bugging you in the Slack about this.
Yeah, I'm really glad that I'm assuming my check is in the mail soon.
Yeah, absolutely.